Part 1. Corpus. Chapter 1. Mysterious Affair. Yesterday afternoon, about 3 o'clock, as a police constable of the T Division was on duty near Pineapple Gate, Edgware Road, his attention was attracted towards an unfinished house, in which he saw at a distance something lying on the ground at the bottom part of the building. He directly approached the spot and there beheld, tied up at the top, a full-sized sack, which he lifted up and found to be of considerable weight. Without loss of time, he undid the fastenings and, to his great horror and consternation, ascertained that the said sack contained the dead trunk and arms of a female. Morning Post, 29th of December, 1836. 27th of March, 1837.
Murderer! They shouted. Whoa! Take her eyes out! It's what she did to Hannah Brown!
Hands battered the wooden roof and sides of the prison wagon, and above the din, Sarah could hear the voice of the driver as he tried to calm the horse and urge it forward. Silently, Sarah willed it too, knowing that if the wagon stopped and the mob got at her, she would be done for. She had heard of such things happening, of a man accused of killing a child seized as he left the Old Bailey and reduced within minutes to a bloody mess, of resurrection men chased through the streets, escaping only when a pub landlord helped them over a wall. No one would help her. The wagon inched through the crowds, away from the magistrate's court and onto a wider street where the horse picked up pace. Through the barred cart door, Sarah could see some of the people running behind them, shouting, shrieking, shaking their fists. Gradually they fell away, some leaning forward, hands on their knees to catch their breath. The vehicle jolted on over the cobblestones, past the great dome of St. Paul's, and then up a side street where the roar of London was briefly muffled. They came to a halt, and the guard wrenched open the wagon door.
Out!
Sarah gathered her skirts and stumbled down onto the ground. It was nearly dark now, and a thin rain had begun to fall. Steadying herself, she stared up at the high stone arch, and beneath it, the great oaken door, studded with nails and topped with spikes. She had walked past this door several times before, but she had never imagined that she would walk through it, for this was Newgate, the most notorious prison in London. The guard knocked on the door, and a few moments later, a porter appeared, his face the drab colour of tallow. He nodded at the guard and looked briefly at Sarah, his expression unreadable. Without saying a word, he led Sarah through a second door, past a lodge, through an iron-bolted gate, and down a narrow corridor until they reached a door that bore the sign Reception Room. It was not much of a reception. There was no fire in the large stone room, and the air was chill. A woman, dressed in dark grey, sat on a high stool by a desk, writing in a thick leather-bound book. She pointed at a wooden bench. Sarah opened her mouth to speak, but the woman put her finger to her lips and shook her head. The only sounds were the scratching of the pen, the closing of doors far off, and an occasional, undistinguishable shout. After a few minutes, a taller woman, her face bone white, her eyes small beads of jet, entered the room, carrying a wooden box and a bundle of clothing. She was dressed, like the first woman, in a grey dress, grey bonnet, and heavy black boots. However, around her shoulders was a black mantle, and about her middle she wore a wide leather belt with a brass buckle, from which dangled a chain of keys.
Name?
She said sharply. Sarah got to her feet.
Sarah Gale.
The woman stared at Sarah, her gaze as cold and hard as a knife. The first woman spoke.
She's the one just been charged with aiding and abetting the Edgware Road murder, Miss Sowerton. I've written it all down.
Oh, I know who she is,
Miss Sowerton said. Sarah lowered her eyes, but felt the woman's gaze still on her, dissecting her. After a few moments, the woman held out her hand.
Possessions?
Sarah looked up.
Give me your things.
From her pocket, Sarah removed the few items she had brought with her. An old silk handkerchief, her locket, and a tortoiseshell-backed brush. The woman took them and put them into the wooden box. To Sarah, it felt as though the last pieces of her were being stripped away.
Undress.
Sarah looked at Miss Sowerton, and then at the other woman, who nodded.
Do as the matron says.
Slowly, Sarah removed her cloak, gloves and shoes, then undid the fastenings on her dark green dress and removed her petticoats, until she was standing in just her shift, stockings and stays in the cold room. Miss Sowerton regarded her steadily, her arms folded. Finally mustering the courage to speak, Sarah said,
I'm not what you think. I didn't do what they say.
The matron's mouth slid into a semblance of a smile.
Oh no, course not. You're as innocent as a babe unborn. None of the inmates in this prison is guilty. The place is fit to burst with innocent souls.
Her lips set again into a line.
You're not to speak unless spoken to. We don't want to hear your lies.
She looked carefully over Sarah, as though eyeing a suspect piece of meat at a market.
Dark brown hair, brown eyes, sharp features, scars to the chest, wrists and lower arms.
With cold fingers, she lifted Sarah's shift.
A mole above the left hip bone.
The woman on the stool scribbled in the leather-bound book. The matron folded Sarah's clothes, placed them in the wooden box and snapped the lid shut. Then she handed Sarah the bundle. While the two women watched, Sarah put on the clothes. A blue wincey dress with dark stripes, a blue checked apron and matching neckerchief, a patched jacket, and thick brown stockings that scratched against her skin. For an instant, she was reminded of her dress fittings with Rosina when they were children, standing before their mother's cold gaze in dark silks and stiff lace. Would it have always come to this? A thud. Two black shoes, old, dirty, and mismatched, had been thrown at her feet.
Put these on and follow me.
The matron led Sarah along a succession of winding alleyways and down dark, low-roofed passages and staircases, her heels clicking against the stone. They came eventually upon a row of identical doorways, and Miss Sowerton paused.
The condemned cells,
she said, watching for Sarah's reaction. Sarah shivered, pierced with a shard of fear. Condemned. Damned. Sentenced to death. If the court decided that she should hang, this would be where she would come on her last night. She realized that she had instinctively raised her hand to clasp her throat, and she lowered it before the matron could notice. They walked through another corridor that led onto a large, empty quadrangle, lit only by the sickly yellow light from two gas lamps. This, the matron announced, was
the women's area,
with its own taprooms, breakfast room and kitchen. Sarah was hungry, for she had taken nothing since a few mouthfuls of porridge at Clerkenwell Prison that morning. The smell of the place, though, turned her stomach. A sour smell of unwashed bodies and chloride of lime. It was for the best, she told herself, that George was not here. Some convicts were allowed to take their children into Newgate with them, but this was no place for a child. This was no place for any human. Still, the thought of him without her was a sharp, almost physical pain.